you know where the open discussion meetings came from to begin with? I digress. It came from the grapevine. An article in the early 70s that talked about open discussion so the newcomer could come in and share where they were at. The grapevine article that dovetailed in with the treatment center philosophy that if you talk about it, it'll be better. A problem shared is a problem... What is it? I forget what it is now.
Trouble shared is a trouble out.
Yeah, which is just sounds just as stupid now as it did then. I'm with you. But the idea, treatment centers all over the country back in the 70s and 80s, because I was in them, I was around them, was telling people to come back in. You're having a problem today? Don't call me, the therapist that you're supposed to call. You with me? Don't go talk to your clergyman that's trained to understand that. Just come into a meeting and share it. You'll feel better. And you know what? She will. The little guy in the back will get up and go out and shoot himself in a parking lot. But she'll feel better.
Yeah.
You with us?
Yeah.
It's tragedy. I don't know. You're so rigid, Chris. We thought well before taking this step, making sure that we were ready, that we could last abandon ourselves utterly to Him, to this power. Y'all with us? That's why I ask people when they pick up a desire chip, folks, to not pick it up. If you're ready to stay sober just today, don't pick up a chip. If you're ready to make a stab at this for good, pick up a chip. The same thing is with this prayer. I don't ask people to sit down and do a prayer if they're still confused about the first proposals, the first step and the second step. You'll follow? Because it will screw them up. God takes this stuff serious, folks. Whether you take this prayer business serious or not is beside the point. God takes it serious. And here's what happens. You say that third step prayer, God, remove my difficulties so victory over those difficulties can bear witness to God's power. And you know what God does? God starts removing the difficulties.
Yeah.
Been my experience. You with us? And then you know what you do? Hot damn, look what I did. Ain't that right? I really worked through this one. Boy, I did this. It's good. But see, that's what happens. See, the noose around our necks in Alcoholics Anonymous is not that things stay bad for a long time. The problem is it gets good pretty quick. We say the prayer. We talk to God. We start working this program. And all of a sudden, this stuff that God said was going to happen starts to happen. We start getting taken to a new place, a position of neutrality around the alcohol and dope. All of a sudden, this job offer comes out of left field and we're making more money than we've ever made. The little relationship thing starts to work out. And all of a sudden, you start to see some hope here. You start to see that God's taking you to a completely different path. What do? We re-enter the mainstream of life and set the big book down and our responsibilities to the newcomer with it. And we get back out there and start mucking it up, doing it our way one more time, making decisions based on self, and the whole thing comes down to crapper. Then we get loaded again. And then we walk back in. I don't know where I made my mistake. I don't know where God let me down. Rubbish. You didn't keep your end of the bargain, did you? Ask the cats that are relapsing how many people they're sponsoring. None. You're not doing what you're supposed to be doing. Ain't that right, guys?
Yeah.
This is purely simple stuff. You think we got you in here? You think God got you in here and got you sober so that you could just enjoy your life? The book says, quote unquote, a price has to be paid. It means that I've got to stop living on self-will. I've got to start thinking about somebody else. That's what this is about, folks.
Yep.
The opportunity is there for everybody. But very few are going to pick it up. You know what? M. Scott Peck wrote a book ages ago in the 80s. Some of y'all have read it, The Road Less Traveled. Some of y'all have read it. Excellent book. You know what? The Road Less Traveled, the book, that the story that they're talking about, the path that they're talking about, is the spiritual path. Y'all down with this? The spiritual path is the road less traveled. Why? Because there's a price to be paid.
Yeah.
Bible talks about it. Other spiritual literature I've read talks about it. The wide road. Mm-hmm. Anybody can get on it. Do it your way. Nobody's going to tell you what to do. Makes sense. But if you want to get on a spiritual path, there's certain things that you've got to do. Period. A price has got to be paid. You can't live a selfish, self-centered life. You can't do God's will your way. How many of you guys have ever had to make a decision between sitting home with a babe and watching a good movie or go to an AA meeting? Which one won out? Pisses me off. I mean, who in the hell put that babe in your life to begin with? God did. Who gave you that nice house and that VCR to begin with? God did. He asked you to suit up and show up and go help another drunk. But you're going to put that on hold so you can enjoy the gift. Well, I guarantee you, you do that enough, you'll walk straight off that spiritual path into an abyss called alcoholism and drug addiction. Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. That makes some people cranky. The decision in the third step prayer, folks, my buddies, is vital and crucial. It starts the thing in motion. I've made a decision to stop smoking. We talked about it last night. You with us? I have bought the medication that Patty and I are going to take. I've set up the scenario. But I haven't stopped yet. You with me? And sometime towards the end of next week, it's going to be nut cutting time. That's a Texas expression. Never mind. You're closer to the truth than you think. So just leave it at that. It's down to brass tacks, and we're going to have to do something with this. It's the same thing. This is what the book says. This is where I think we're killing people more than just about anything else in the fellowship, other than not letting the newcomer work with others. Talks about we found it desirable to take this with a spiritual and understanding friend, but take it. But this is only a beginning. Bottom of page 63. Next, we launched out on a course of vigorous action. The first step, which is personal house cleaning. You with us? Guys, what a visual that is with Bill Wilson. We get up off our knees. We've done a third step prayer. We've made a decision. Now we've got to put some feet under it. Now we've got to take some action. You want to sit there and tell me week after week after week that you're working on a third step? Well, there's nothing to work on. It's just like the second step. It's a prayer. It's a decision. You either want to do this or you don't. Well, I'm not sure I do. Then go drink. Then go drink. Go smoke some rock. Do what you got to do. Because obviously you don't think you're one of us. Y'all understand? It always goes back to the first step. Guy comes back in, he's relapsed. It's always about the first step. Always. No, I just didn't understand the fourth step. How long didn't you understand how to do the fourth step? Well, a few months. Rubbish. You didn't believe that your life was powerless. You didn't believe that you needed the spiritual experience in order to get well. You paid lip service. You said you were powerless. I'm powerless. I'm powerless over people, place. I want to puke. Your actions show me that you're not. Make sense? These patients come to the hospital, right? And we tell them, we talk to them about this. We tell them when they get there, don't get in relationships out here. We'll can your butt. We'll get you off this campus in a heartbeat if you get tangled up in a relationship. You with us? But they're not drinking and drugging. We got them detox now. There's no alcohol or dope in their body to treat this spiritual malady. You with us? What treats a spiritual malady better than booze? A poke, I guarantee you. A little medicinal sex. I mean, this is not. So what's the first thing that we do? Oh, AA boy meets AA girl on AA campus. It's love in the hills. You with us? And then they get drunk. And then see, then here's what they want to do. They want to blame the relationship. The relationship didn't get them drunk. If they'd worked the 12 steps, they could have had the relationship. Nothing out there gets me drunk. I get me drunk. My mind gets me drunk. My only decision, my only choice is whether or not I'm going to work the 12 steps. Am I going to finish this work rapidly so that I can be safe and protected? And then I can go get it. And if the relationship works out, great. If it doesn't work out, fine. But I'm not going to have to drink over it. Make sense? Yeah. Got patients that come into that hospital and they got every reason in the world not to be able to stay sober. But they come in and they make a commitment. I'm going to make a decision. I'm going to let God take care of my life from now on. You with us? And they do. How do we know they do? Because they got up off their knees after a third step prayer and went straight to the store and bought a notebook and started writing the crap in the fourth step that we're going to talk about in the next hour. Very simple. They start doing the work. The other guys go chill out. Well, I've done that third step. Now I can sit back on my big old fat butt and just take it easy for a while. No, you can't. The book just said you can't. It says we launched out on a course of vigorous action.
Yeah.
You with us? It's steps 4 through 9, guys, that show me that we've done the third step. It's steps 4 through 9 that show me we've done the third step. That's the feat of the third step. Up to this point, it's just verbiage. Yeah? I tell you, I love you, baby. You with me? It's just verbiage until I show you. I show you by getting into action around this work. And again, the grinder is that we've got a fellowship that tells people to take their time. Well, you've done the third step. Good work. I'll get with you next week and we'll start the fourth step. Why? That's not what the book says. Go sit on your ass for a week. It didn't say that. It says very next thing we do is we launch out on a course of vigorous action. Yep, you with us?
Yep.
Yeah.
If we would just adhere to what the literature says, we would have a lot more people sober. And a lot of you in here feeling uncomfortable because you didn't do it this way. I'm with you. I didn't either for 7 years. And I didn't stay sober. And in 87, they said, we're going to do exactly what the book tells us to do. To the best of our ability, we're going to adhere to what the book tells us to do. 2 weeks after I got back to this fellowship, I'm working on that fourth step. I've got a completed fourth step within 2 weeks. Been in AA for 7 years, never done any of these. But now, 2 weeks... And I'm sitting on the tailgate of that truck in North Texas, and it dawns on me that the obsession to drink is lifted. I haven't wanted a drink since. Now why? You think God just started, well, Chris, you've suffered enough. Here, I'll fix your ass. No. Because I finally did what I said I would do. I finally did my end of the bargain. I did the stupid paperwork they asked me to do. Didn't want to do it. Didn't have a very good attitude about it. I don't think it really matters. Did I do as a perfect a four step as you did? Probably not. But I did it. And I finished it. And I dumped it in the fifth step. And that's fourth and fifth step stuff is what we're going to talk about in the next hour. Let's go sin. Okay, bye. 1 hour and 15 minutes to cover this. It won't take any longer than that. One of the most confusing and probably misunderstood pieces of our 12 steps is this fourth and fifth step process. One of the reasons that it's so misunderstood is that everybody seems to have their own damned opinion about it. And the book is crystal clear. Book spends 12 pages explaining about how to do it and then how to do a fifth step. It tells you what we're looking for, what we're trying to accomplish. And it seems like every time I turn around, there's somebody else got another four-step guide. They're dropping it on my table to check and see. And treatment centers, of course, are notorious for this. They have their own guides and their own deals. And you know, here's the deal. Again, for some of you that weren't here last night, my intention is to talk to you guys about... Let's assume that the person we're working with is a newcomer. I mean, I'm in... Before I get into any of this, don't misunderstand me. There's some ways to do four steps that are more revealing in certain areas. You with us? You could do extended third column. You can do, you know, I've seen 8 columns. You can get a lot of information out of something like that. And if your head's clear and you're sober a bunch of years and you want to sit down and do this, what a great idea. I mean, this program is pretty open and roomy. I'm just saying for the newcomer, the little knucklehead just coming into the room, for us to try to complicate what was essentially a very simple process is ludicrous. You know, if some of this will grind some of you because I understand that a lot of you guys have come through treatment centers and you were taught a certain way. I'm just coming straight out of the big book. Well, what a concept. You know, it's not that. The early guys of Alcoholics Anonymous, if you read Wally P's stuff, Back to Basics, you know, the sponsor would sit down and help the guy actually write it. It's pretty simple. This is not a novel.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
What do you think about the Wally P stuff?
The question was, what do we like? I like it. I like Wally P. Again, but I like the Big Book better.
Yep.
And so to do one and not do the other, I think, because there's so much more information that we get about life in general, not just work in the steps, but life in general in this, about how to deal with our families and the people around that don't get covered in that literature. Back to basics is good stuff. I want to mention, and I'll mention it when we do steps 10 and 11 this afternoon, right before we do my favorite step, which is the 12th step. Yay! Wally P. is also, if you look at his website, this is a good plug for him, he's got a book called How to Listen to God. It's one of the best books on meditation I've ever read anywhere. And we'll talk about some of that later this afternoon. First things off, we want to understand what this is, because there's a lot of misunderstandings about what the fourth step is. The fourth step is a fact-finding mission. It's an inventory. You with us? It is not confession. Confession is a piece of this in a fifth step. Sharing with another human being what's going on with me. It's my ideal, and I am pretty much today, to be transparent. If there's anything in my life that I think I can share with you to help you with yours, I'm perfectly comfortable sharing with you. You with us? As a result of doing multiple fourth and fifth steps, there's a lot of people that know about me. They know about my indiscretions. They know about my lousy bookkeeping techniques. They know, you know, they know all of my warts and stuff. And that's perfectly okay, because the more people that know about me, the better, more comfortable I'm going to be. You with us? It's the cats that stop sharing with other people that end up getting in trouble. We were talking to some of you guys yesterday about this. I know a lot of people in long-term sobriety who have gotten to a place where they don't work the steps anymore and they don't do fourth and fifth steps anymore. So what happens is they don't share with anybody about what's really going on. They share at a very superficial level. Having kind of a rough day. Yeah? How? Let's go out and smoke a butt and talk about it. Why don't you jot down another little fourth step real quick, and let's dump a fifth step, and let's get down to brass tacks about what's going on. See, remember last night we were talking about it. Alcoholism and drug addiction is a progressive illness. It continues to progress even when I'm not drinking. Not drinking and going to meetings doesn't treat alcoholism. I can get disconnected from that power by all of the stuff, and that's what the book starts to talk about in the first pages of this fourth step. Starting on page 63, moves on over to 75. It talks about these resentments being the number one offender. It's been my experience that resentment, as it's manifested itself in selfish and self-centeredness, is what kills alcoholics. Guys, I've watched self-pity kill more alcoholics and drug addicts than anything else. Y'all down with that? It goes bad. We get this little, it's not, and we're blocked. And we come up with some excuse to go drink. Well, she caused me to drink. God, I owe the women of the world amends I'll never be able to pay for blaming them for every damn problem that was ever happened in this world. It was all based in selfish and self-centeredness and self-pity. You with us? It manifests itself in this big old chunk of resentment. Damn women. Mm-hmm. You'll stay sober now. No, you won't. Let me make a couple of points and we're going to go through this real quick. Victims don't get sober. Victims get dry for a period of time, but they will not stay sober. I want to make it real clear, because a lot of you guys, you pick up these CDs and y'all just listen to pieces of this, and you don't listen to the whole thing as a whole, so you think I'm being heartless there. There's a difference between being victimized and being a victim. You down? Bad things happen to us, folks. And some of you guys out there, especially you little dope fiends, really bad things can happen. And I'm with you on that one. But if I continue to hang on to it and make that a part of my life, I will not get well. And that's what we end up doing. We end up carrying all this baggage around. We carry it, and then we wonder why our lives are so affected by it. I do illustrations at the hospital. You know, I'm carrying chairs. You know, this is the resentment against that woman that cheated on me. And this is the resentment against that employer. And I'm carrying all this burden, this baggage around. And I wonder, the book talks about it, why we're making such a rough going of life. is because I can't let go of all the crap that happened to me in the past. I can't wake up in the morning and be a new child of God and go out there and kick butt and take names and take all the good stuff that's coming my way, because I'm buckling under the weight of my past. Every woman that I date pays for all the other women that mess me around. It's not fair. Every employer never catches a clean break from me because I'm going to bring all the stuff from all the other employers into this job with me. 90% of the relationship problems that we see in early sobriety with you guys trying to have relationships, that's what it's about. All the crap you're coming in. Can you imagine that? How many women did I date over my 20 years of drinking and drugging? And I dated a lot of women. I used to think it was because I was Don Juan. The truth is, if you went out with me once, that was it. I had to go find somebody else. It's a numbers game. If you went out with me twice, we're already naming our kids. You know, I mean, this is bad shit. It's like, I'm one of the original stalkers. So, oh, I am. It's nuts. And I'm bringing all of this stuff into these relationships. And of course, she's had some problems, and she's bringing all this stuff. Can you imagine? You know, you get into bed on a Saturday night, and you've got all these people in bed with you. Not a pretty sight. Not a pretty sight. So, the guys explained to me that this was an inventory, a current inventory. What we're trying to do is, I run a little store down there at the hospital, and when I do inventory next month, I'm not going to take inventory on the candy that the bastards ate last month. I'm taking inventory on the stuff that's current today. You with us? Doesn't mean that I don't go back in the past. If something's still bothering me, I have to do an inventory on that. But a lot of you guys are making this thing so hard because you think this is... You take that line out of the book, until we told somebody our whole life story, it doesn't mean that I've got to hear every detail about your damn life. And if we do a fifth step and you start that, I'm going to stop you. Because we can't find any truth in all of those details. We need to cut down to brass tacks. We're looking for specific things. Y'all with me? We're going to explain it if you're not. It's very simple. It's a fact-finding mission. I want to see the things that are blocking me from the sunlight of the Spirit. If I dated you in high school and you dumped me, and I haven't thought about you in 30 years, you with me? I'm not going to write your name down on this inventory. I'm not going to waste my time writing down a name. Did I like you particularly for dumping me? No. But I haven't even thought of you in 30 years. That is not blocking me from the sunlight of the Spirit. I have plenty to write about, folks. Plenty. With current stuff. If I'm grinding my teeth over it, I'm going to write you on my list. People, institutions, and principles that I'm pissed at goes on my quote-unquote grudge list. That's what the book talks about. Again, we're going to talk about it in this fifth step stuff. If this was just about confession, come on, guys. I hear that all the time. I'm going to go do my fifth step with a priest. You have every right to do that. You're wasting your time. Because a priest is not going to hold you accountable and help you see your part. You with us? If confession was all this was about, we wouldn't have any drunk Catholics. And we do. I make this grudge list. I list the people, institutions, and principles that I'm cranky with. I use this guide. If we went down to the restaurant and had lunch and she walked in the room, would I feel uncomfortable? Would I finish my dinner quicker so I could get away? If the answer is no, why would I write her down on my list? You with us? Some of us were raised differently, folks. We've learned to forgive. We're not all full of hate. Like, there's some of us that are full of that. But most of us are not. So this idea in treatment is they tell us, that, you know, you need to have at least 200 names on your inventory. I'm sorry. I didn't know 200 people. And I damn sure didn't hate those people. The guy that's got the most names on his list is not the guy that's doing the most thorough work. With us? I make a grudge list. Book says on top of page 66, there's a great place in there. It talks about remorse. It says sometimes this was remorse and then we were sore at ourselves. So that means that you need to put your name on that list. How many of you guys didn't like yourself when you got to this program? But I've heard people in treatment tell people not to put their names on this list. I hated myself, folks. I'm telling you, in 1987, when I walked back in that room, I hated myself so bad that I hated every person in the room. I was a card-carrying bigot. I hated everybody for no reason. I hated myself. Was resentful at myself for so many things. So many of the things that I owe amends to were going to come off that list that I was doing around myself. Bill Wilson was explicit when he said, you need to put your name on that list. Yo, cool? So here's what you do. You sit down and you do a little prayer. God, show me who I'm pissed at. You with us? This should be like the same day you did a third step prayer, you get started on this. Don't... It's going to come at you fast. Have a paper, some sharpened pencils. You with us? Because the stuff's going to start coming. I'm telling you guys, we're talking about real power. We've asked God to guide us here. Now we're asking Him one more specific question. God, show me the people, institutions, and principles that I am pissed at. And the names will start flowing. Mm-hmm. When the names stop flowing, stop. I'm working on my four step. I'm working on my... God damn, buddy, that was 8 months ago. You still working on that? It's so long. You're not working on a four step. You haven't touched it in 2 weeks. You're not working on a four step. You're lying. You're sitting on a four step. It's two different things. Make sense?
Yeah.
Guys, God will constantly reveal to us more. You with us? I, in subsequent inventories that I did in later years of sobriety, stuff from my past percolated to the top. Never once gave that person a second thought when I first did my inventory. But as I got stronger and I got better, weller, I was able to see certain things about my past that I didn't deal with. And I jot those names down and I do another, I knock it out. It's no big deal. You'll be knocking on your sponsor's door to do a fist step and a name will cross your mind. Stop. Write him down. Do a little four column real quick and get on about your business. It's no big deal. But stop dragging your feet on this thinking that you're going to get the perfect list. You're not. Cool?
Yep.
Jot it down. You may have 16 names on there. You may have 60. I don't know. It doesn't matter. It's your inventory. I want to mention this real quick. It's not in the big book. It is your responsibility to keep this four step yourself. We don't want to cause more harm by laying this stupid thing out on a table. I've talked to thousands of alcoholics and addicts that have left it out on their desk. They've encouraged their wives and their husbands to go to Al-Anon. They've come to family week at the treatment center. They know what a four step is. And you've got this big notebook with big fourth step on it. They're going to stop and they're going to look at it. You with us? You're going to owe some amends that you didn't originally owe. This is private stuff. That's why I encourage you guys to get this stuff finished and get that damn thing away. Burn it, throw it in the trash, get rid of it. Don't leave it around. I'm keeping my four steps so I can show my sponsees. Guys, this is all you need to show your sponsees. It's a big book. You've got the experience now under your belt. You know how to teach them. You don't have to show them jack. Get rid of the evidence. That shit floats up and enters the court of law all the time. Get rid of it. This is your stuff. Y'all cool? I put the names, I got the grudge list on a separate sheet of paper, and I jot this stuff down. Oh. I put mom. Mom's dad's, all the stuff. They end up on there.
Grudge list, resentment list?
Yeah, same thing. The people that I'm pissed at. I start with a list first. You with us? I don't try to do the columns as it comes to mind because it gets too confusing. I make the list first, then I take each one and work them across a little four column. In the book, it's three columns. I just bust it out to make it a little simpler to understand. It's the same thing. Y'all cool?
Mm-hmm.
We take that much liberty. I put the first person I'm pissed at in the first column. You may not remember the name. Red-haired waitress at Denny's. I don't remember her name. I just remember what she did. You cool? It doesn't matter. God knows. You with it? She was a witch. Okay. Cool? Cheated on dad. In my head, that's what that was about. Resentful at mom. Dad was great. Loved him. Mom's great. Love her. But there was some... with us? I look at the third column. How did this affect me? There's seven areas that we look at. Did it affect my self-esteem? Her doing that to my dad, did that affect my self-esteem?
Yeah.
How I think others see me.
Yeah.
And I come over.
How about pride? How I feel about myself. How about personal relations? Relationships with buds, the people, folks around me. Yeah. Mm-hmm. How about sex relations?
Yes.
I mean, if mom's doing it, you're going to do it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
How about ambition? What I need to be okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What about my security?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What's the other one?
Talk about it.
Yeah, thanks. Did that affect my pocketbook?
It could.
No.
No.
I can't see it. That's a bit of a stretch. It might. For some of you, it might have. So I look at how it affected me. And then I go to the fourth column. The book says we stop. And we start looking at this from an entirely different angle. We stop looking at it from our point of view, and we start looking at it about what the truth was. And I have to sit down and I have to really look and see what my part is, my piece of this. Every resentment you've got a piece in. Don't misunderstand me. I'm not saying that you caused that bad thing to happen. I'm saying the fact that you're carrying it around for 20 years is your piece. Their piece could be this big. Your piece could be that big. You with me? But if you can't see that, you'll continue to be a victim. And that's what I am in the first three columns. A victim. Y'all with us?
Yep.
First three columns, that's all it is. Enjoy it. Swim in it. Just dump it. Get it all down. But that's what the book says. But we stop. We get to the fourth column. Now it's time to look at this from a completely different attitude. Flip it around. What piece of this is me? You're looking at three or four areas. You're looking at where was I selfish, self-centered? Where was I fearful? Where was I dishonest? Now those are the only areas you look at. I look at these four-step guides and they've got all of this stuff in there. And it's like, guys, we're looking for these four areas. Selfish, self-centered, fearful, or dishonest? With me? What's the truth? When I sit down and look at this truthfully, what's the truth? Fear? Can you see it?
Yep.
Absolutely. I don't want a bunch of people seeing me in that spot. Her behavior reflects on me. Am I dishonest? I'll tell you two places I'm dishonest there. One, I'm cheating on my wife too. Here I am doing the same thing I'm pissed at her for doing. The truth of the matter is, I go a little deeper and I get down to brass tacks and realize she never cheated on anybody. Perception. That's what I told myself. That's what the book talks about. These resentments, these wrongs others have done to us, fancied or real, have the power to actually kill. So much of the stuff going on in our head is just that. It's just in our head. It never even actually happened. Make sense? I'm not saying all of it. I'm saying some of it. You've got to be real specific and get really honest in those first steps. Because if you lie in that first second column with a cause, if you lie there, it's going to screw you up over in the fourth column. So you've got to get really, you've got to avoid words like always and never. She was never there for me. Now that's a lie. It would have been better if I'd said, often when I needed her, she wasn't there. Now that's more specific. You follow?
Yeah.
You can't lie in that second column and then tell the truth in the fourth column. It'll throw you off. And each individual one, we look at this. The dishonesty, the fear, and the selfishness. Anytime you're judging somebody, buddies, you're being selfish. Isn't that the truth? The book doesn't say judgmentalness. It says selfishness, because that's exactly what it is. And I'm a judging some bitch. If you don't do it the way I think it ought to be done, I'm judging you. And who in the hell am I to do that? Guys, it's like we go to God and we ask Him every day, God, grant me some mercy. Grant me. Help me through that legal problem. Help me through all of this stuff. I'm going in such a tough spot. Help me out. Help me. Help me. Grant me mercy. Grant me mercy. Grant me mercy. But that guy at work, screw him. I'm telling you, the spiritual literature is crystal clear. Clean up your crap here on earth and then come to me. I'm a card-carrying bigot. Hating the whole race of people. But I'm going to ask God to grant me mercy. There's something wrong with that. And I couldn't see that until I did this fourth step. I couldn't see that until I wrote this stuff down on paper. You jot them down. You go to the next one. You go to the next one. You go to the next one. Work them in columns if you want to. It's quicker. How did this affect me? How did this affect me? How did this affect me? Work them in columns. It goes twice as fast that way. I don't care how you do it. Just do it. Get it finished. Y'all cool with that? You finish the resentment inventory. You got a little two-column fear inventory. The book says on page 68, there's the instructions for a fear inventory. I've seen these multi-columned deals. It just freaks me out. What's the fear? And why do you think you got it? Make sense? I went to my sponsor, just looked at it, just glanced over. I'm not afraid of anything. Texas boy. I'm not afraid of anything. Oh yeah? You afraid of dying? Well, yeah. You afraid of AIDS? This is in the 80s. Everybody was afraid of AIDS. Well, yeah. I mean, who wouldn't be? Didn't everybody put it down? You afraid of women? That's a cheap shot. Yes. Oh, that's good. Chris, why don't you just make another list, a list of things you're not afraid of. It'll be shorter. Little bunny rabbits, you know. The truth of the matter is, so much of this stuff over here in this fourth column, you could just drag right straight over to your fear inventory because it's all the same damn thing. I'm afraid of how I'm going to look. Would y'all agree with that? Most of us, that's why we are. We don't want to share in meetings because we're afraid of what people will think. We don't want to ask a question because we're afraid of looking stupid. Yeah? You don't want to go get the job that you've always wanted because you're afraid you won't get it. I mean, fear, the book says, 68, y'all read it. It's an evil and corroding thread. It touches about every aspect of our life. I didn't understand that until I sat down and wrote this stuff down and realized, God damn, my life is chock full of fear. And buddies, that's not why we were placed here on this earth. I got to read something to you. Turn to that page, 68. Some of you guys haven't read this in a while, I'm sure. Perhaps there's a better way. This is after the instructions. Perhaps there's a better way. We think so. For now we're on a different basis. The basis of trusting and relying upon God. Ain't that right? Haven't we just done that in the third step? Said, God, you take this business. We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. We're in the world to play the role He assigns. Yeah? What does God want us to do? But I think God wants us happy, joyous, and free, it says in another place. So you got to ask yourself the question. Just to the extent that we do as we think Him, He would have us and humbly rely on Him, does He enable us to match calamity with serenity? It talks about after the next paragraph. We don't apologize for God. Instead, we let God demonstrate through us what He can do. And some of us are afraid to it. That's what I said earlier in that earlier session this morning. A lot of us are paying lip service to this thing called God. Oh, I believe God can remove the obsession to drink, but I don't think He can do anything with the rest of my life. And that's how we end up in dead-end jobs, folks. I cannot tell you how many people I sponsor that are in jobs they absolutely can't stand. Why are you there? Let's poke this a little bit. Why are you working that job you can't stand? Because I make good money. Uh-huh. Why do you have to make that kind of money? You're miserable every day, but you're making the money. Why? Well, I live in that big house on the hill, overlooking the bay. I got to make that much money. Oh? So what's more important? The house on the hill that everybody can see you living in? Or your peace and serenity? And there's a bunch of you sitting in this room right now that are going to have to question that. I'm in trouble financially because I got a car payment of $700. Why do you need that car? Well, everybody on my block drives one. I mean, hell, you got to have a Hummer in Texas. Excuse me? I drive a 15-year-old paid-for Nissan pickup truck. Because I don't give a rat's butt what you think about me. You with me? And I can lay down at night in perfect peace and ease, not having to worry about paying all those bills. And that $700 that you're paying for your car payment, I'm dropping in a 401. I don't have to worry about my retirement. Thank you very much. You with us? This is stuff we don't talk about in our fellowship. And this is exactly what Bill Wilson's trying to get us to see. How many of you guys are in relationships that you don't want to be in? You're there because it's convenient. Fear is keeping you there. Well, I hate the bastard, but I don't want anybody else to have him. And, man, that's messed up. But I've done it. You with me? All right, I don't want to get out of this relationship. This is a crappy relationship. But hell, the next one could be worse. Fear will keep you immobilized. See, the spiritual path is a journey. We're supposed to get on it and see. In prayer and meditation that we'll talk about later today, God's going to give you cats some guidance about what to do. I believe God wants us to be happy, joyous, and free. And some of us are working the steps and we're in the program, but we're not being honest with ourselves because we won't get clear in this fear inventory about what's really blocking us. Why won't you step out on faith? The third step prayer said God's going to take care of your difficulties. But you won't give them a chance to do that because you're too busy hanging on for all dear life to hold on what you think you've got. I've watched these cats. We've got this big hill. Well, it's a pissant hill compared to... I can't wait. Some of y'all are going to come to Ingram and visit me someday and you're going to go, this is where you live? I mean, oh my God. We got this pretty good little hill there. We got a little chapel on this hill and we do fist steps up there a lot of times, you know. And we'll sit there, we'll do a fist step with a guy and he'll be on fire. He'll come back down off that hill and he'll just be excited about his life. You with us? Case manager will come over. So Chris, I need to talk to the guy. And the guy will go over and say, and the case manager tells him he's just been fired from his job. Now he's been up on the hill for an hour telling me how bad he hated the damn job. Comes down off the hill. I just got off the phone with his employer and he's been terminated. And this guy goes into a fucking tailspin. You with me? Oh, how can God do this to me? How can God do this? Guys, change is good. You know, it's not the change that hurts, it's the resistance to the change. None of us like the change. You come and you sit in the same damn place every time. You know, this is my seat. You know, and I understand. Change is good. Change is good. But that's on the spiritual path. I'm telling you, there's going to be some changes. God may want you in Ingram, Texas. I hope so. I don't know what God wants for you. I just know that it's the absolute best for you. And if you'll come at this with an open mind, God will show you what to do. Stop hanging on to your past. Stop hanging on to the stuff that you think is right. It's not right. Otherwise, you'd be happy, joyous, and free. And that's what I think this is about. Y'all down with that? We're watching the time. I finish a fear inventory. Knock it down. Guys, that fear inventory should take you an hour to do. An hour, max. God, show me what I'm pissed, what I'm afraid of. Boom, it's there. Cool? Next, sex inventory. There's three separate inventories. Resentment inventory, fear inventory, and sex inventory. Sex inventory ain't got jack to do with sex. It's got to do with my relationships with the opposite sex. Relationships in general. It asks some specific questions in the book, none of which has anything to do with sex. Y'all with me? Oh, listen, I hear this all the time. I watch these guys say, oh, goody, now we get to talk about the women. Excuse me? I tell you, if you're coming to a fifth step with that attitude, you're in trouble. You want a real humbling experience? Do your sex inventory with a woman sometime. You selfish, self-centered sons of bitches. See what happens. I treated women like garbage. And that's what I got to see in my sex inventory. It's not about sitting here telling about how many women you went to bed with. There's no question in the book that talks about the act of sex. It talks about where have you been this... Here, let me look. It's page 69. Bill Wilson, tell me he didn't have a sense of humor. He meant this. We reviewed our conduct over the years, our own conduct over the years past. Where had we been selfish? You with me? Dishonest. Inconsiderate. Oh my gosh. Whom had we hurt? Did we unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? Oh, I'm a master at it. Where were we at fault? What should we have done instead? We got this all down on paper and looked at it. Know what I'm saying? I was a consummate flirt, guys. Whether I went to bed with you or not, we were flirting like I was. And I cannot tell you how many women I hurt with my behavior. I was completely oblivious to it. I just thought I was being cute. They were taking it serious. And they got their feelings hurt. I'd start dating somebody steady and they'd look and say, I thought we had something going here. You thought wrong. Shame on me. I led them to believe because my sensitive little ego needed to believe that. You with me? That's wrong. Book says it, buddies. If I continue to harm other people, I am sure to drink. Now that's what this is about. It ain't about the sex. I hear people, we were talking earlier about relationships and early sobriety. You don't get in any relationships in early sobriety. I do not agree. Nowhere in the book does it say that. Have I seen a lot of problems around it? Absolutely. When we don't make recovery number one, you're going to be in trouble with this. Y'all with us? Bottom line. How am I treating the opposite sex? Because if I keep treating them like garbage, I'm going to get blocked from the sunlight of the Spirit and I'm going to get loaded. And I've watched it 1,000 times. Guys, what do we drink over? Sex and checks. That's what we drink over. 9 times out of 10, the stuff that you guys want to talk to me after the meetings are about, not here, but I mean in a regular meetings, sex and checks. All based in dishonesty. If we can clean up the wreckage of our past and change our behaviors, we're going to be golden. Make sense? But some of that stuff's character defect stuff that we're going to talk about in a little bit. If you were doing an inventory the way the book outlines, I could sit down. I'm not recommending this, but I'm telling you, I could sit down with any woman in here and do my fourth step, my fifth step with you. By the letter of the law, we're not talking about anything that I couldn't share with any other woman. And vice versa. It is not confession. Our secrets are our own worst enemy. So I need to tell somebody else about the stuff that I've done. It comes out in the resentment piece around myself. Make sense? If I've done something to harm you and I need to tell somebody about it, I need to write it down. I need to write it down either in the resentment inventory or in this sex inventory. But in a general way, I don't have to get down to specifics. Y'all cool? This doesn't take that long. One night stands, lump them together. If you were in a committed relationship, do it separate. My one night stands were all the same. Same person, different name, same person. Bless their hearts. Why do I want to sit there and give you all the sordid freaking details about that relationship? Well, I met her at work, and we didn't really know each other until no. That's why we have these things called eight-hour fifth steps. Rubbish. Is it any wonder that some of these sponsors get tired of hearing fifth steps? Because we're going too long with it. When I sit down with a person to do a fourth step, I give them the instructions, and we set a date. You come to me and says, you want to do a fourth step. You with me? I can't. You stay away from me. I sit down and I'm going to do a fourth step. You with me? I says, okay, that's great. And I says, have you ever done one before? They say, no. Okay, I'm going to give you 2 weeks if I'm feeling generous. No more than 2 weeks. Under any circumstances will I give them. We're going to set an appointment right now to do a fifth step. That's the only way they're going to get it done. You with us? Usually with the guys I sponsor, it's 1 week. You've got 1 week from today to do this fourth step, fifth step. If you're serious about doing this, you will make the time to finish this damn work. If I'm going to make time to hear it, you're going to make time to write it. Cool? We'll set this appointment up.
Hey, Chris, can I ask you a question?
Sure.
You help them write it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'll sit down with a note, especially if they're new, their first time. I do a lot of work with guys that have been sober a long time that are dying in the fellowship of a spiritual malady. They've been around the fellowship for years, but they're nuts. They're suicidal. They've stopped doing the work. And I end up doing a lot of work with those kind of people. You follow me? They know generally how to do it, but I go back over it and I make sure that we're going to do it this way. Because I want to get down and see so I can see the facts and figures. I don't want to get caught up in all the freaking details. You follow? It's not my life story. It's the essence of my life. And that's what we want to see.
Yeah.
I set the appointment with you, and I'm there with my book. We do a third step prayer again. I ask God to come into the room, and I listen to your fifth step. You with us? Here's the process I do. Y'all can do the same thing. Just how I was taught. I have a notebook in front of me. And I've got two pieces. I've got it divided in two. I've got character defects, seventh step. You with me? On one side. And I've got amends, eighth step, on the other. And as we're going through this fifth step, I'm jotting down some notes. Anytime I hear something that sounds surprisingly like a character defect, judgmentalness, fear, dishonesty, you with us? This stuff, I'm writing it down in that seventh step column. If I hear something that you're doing and I think you owe amends to, I'm going to write their name down in the eight-step list. Doesn't mean it's etched in stone that you're going to have to make amends, but it's something we're going to talk about later. We're not going to get involved in talking about eight-step when I'm in the middle of a fifth step. You'll follow? And then I got this list all down, and then I give it to the cat after the meeting is over. We're going to talk about that in the next, the 6 and 7. But I've got this information. I'm pulling it from the information they're giving me in their fifth step. They will walk away from that room with a completed seventh step list of character defects and an eighth step amends list. Boom, boom, boom.
Chris, ask your question.
Please.
Do you ever stop them for, if they carry on and going on and on and on and on? Do you say, hang on a second?
We're very specific and very directional. Guys, I know some of you...
If you take it from a list.
I know some of you have had these warm, fuzzy 12-hour fifth steps where you sat there and bonded with your sponsor. I do not do that. When some of you guys start stepping up to the plate, sponsoring the people you're supposed to be, you will see exactly where I'm coming from. I don't want to hear all of this stuff. Everything that you tell me other than what I'm asking for here is fluff. You're trying to rationalize why you did it. You're trying to explain to me why you were placed in that position. Guys, I'm looking for truth. Did you do it or not?
Yep.
Boom. What was your part? Boom. Next. The minute they hit it, I go next.
Mm-hmm.
Well, but wait, I'm not finished. Next. You with me? We go on to the next. We want to keep it moving. We may be there for hours, but we're not going to be there like some I've heard and have done myself, these 8-hour fifth steps. I mean, guys, you're just not that sick.
Whoa.
You're just not that sick. Specifics. Inventory. Y'all down with this? Some of y'all are grinding your teeth. I love that thing. We lit candles and we just shared for 12, 13, 14 hours. I think if that was what was intended, Bill Wilson would have written it down. He said, we sit down and we tell somebody what's going on with us. And this is exactly what's going on with us. Make sense? I can't get to the specifics of the character defects if you continue to talk and rationalize why you've done this. We've got too much talking. We're looking for truth because the truth is going to set you free. Make sense?
Yep.
Some of these take 45 minutes to do. And some of these take several hours to do. So what? I got it. That's the least I can do for this person. I can give them that amount of time. But I'm not going to sit there as your counselor or therapist. I'm there to listen and jot down these notes and to help you see your truth. If you see your truth, we're not going to talk about it anymore. Let's go on to the next one. You follow me? Let me put it like this, then we'll let you go. We'll go to lunch. I'm not going to spend any more time talking about that molestation than I am about that gas credit card that you stole from your mother. I want to see your part. How it affected you and your part. Next. You with us? And y'all want to talk about it till the cows come home. But when we let the newcomer do that, we allow them to remain a victim. We don't want to do that. Cool? Sounds pretty rough, doesn't it? It's not. It's love. If you're doing a good fifth step, you guys are laughing your ass off. You with us? Because you keep saying, God, well, I don't need to reread that one. I did the same thing. I said, no shit. You start seeing patterns. You start seeing the same. We're doing the same thing. What you got, huh?
I'm never quite sure what the person's heart is when it does come to a child molestation.
Yeah. Thanks for asking it.
What's the question?
She's never really knows what to say when somebody talks about molestation. I'll tell you right now, it's a pat answer. It can vary a bit, but it's a pretty pat answer. Because people get rigid about this and they get real crazy around this. So you're telling me that I caused that to happen? No, I asked you to look at your part. I said it again. You can be victimized. And some of us in this room were. The questions boil down to, when did it happen? How long did it happen? How long did you carry it without talking to somebody else about it? You follow what I'm saying? It's like the big circle and the little circle. It went on for years and I never told anybody. And I was 20 years old and still hadn't told anybody. That's your part. You tried to carry the weight of the world on your shoulders, based in fear. Fear of what other people were going to think. You'll follow? We're not branding them bad. But I don't want them to put any more emphasis on that than the stupid resentment around the old girlfriend. Because it all blocks us. Make sense? You don't have to be a therapist to hear a fifth step. All you have to do is be a responsible member of Alcoholics Anonymous to help them see their truth, what happened. And all of a sudden we take the importance off that bad thing. And put it on even playing field with the accumulative effect of all the other crap that we've done. And they can get free from that. That's not who you are, folks. You're not as... Here's a quote. Good way to end it. The spiritual meaning of every situation is not what happens to us, but who we decide to become because of what happens to us.
Huh. What page is that?
It's not in the big book. I wish it was. Marianne Williamson. Y'all can jot the quote down. She's wonderful. And she's crystal clear. But see, I needed to hear that. We want to think that the stuff that happened in the past is who we are. And if you allow it, it will be till the day you die. But what a crock of shit that is. What a wasted life that is. That's not who you are. I know it has affected you, but then you get to make a decision whether it's going to continue to affect you or whether you're going to get past it.
Say it again.
You get to decide.
Can you read the quote?
You want the quote?
Yeah.
Oh. My quote or this witch's quote? Okay. The spiritual meaning of every situation is not what happens to us. I'm going to leave this up here. You guys can copy it. But who we decide to become because of what happens to us. Guys, we got people in this room right now, I can guarantee you, that are still grinding their teeth over people that have been dead for 20 years. Now, if that's not an exercise in futility, I don't know what is. We're waiting for dead parents to rise up out of the grave to apologize to us for things that happened 40 years ago. We have, at a certain point, we have got to stop carrying that. That is not who we are. I'll tell you this. You can become a better person because of that crap. God is going to take what happened to you and let you use that to help somebody else. Can you look around this room here in Vancouver? Look around this room and think about the collective wisdom of everybody in this room. God, we've been through the ringer. And because we've been through it, we can help you get through it. It's the greatest gift in the world. I'm sorry that I had to eat out of dumpsters in Houston, Texas. But you know what happens to me? I end up in an AA meeting and I'm sitting there looking at somebody and they're all busted up. And he says, Chris, I just don't feel a part of this group. I ate dinner in a dumpster last night. No shit. Kentucky Fried Chicken? Because that's where I used to eat my dinner. You with us? You ate out of a dumpster? I don't want to share that with anybody. I don't want to let them know that this big shot with this hospital, this professional man, is 8 out of 10. That's who I. That's a part of my life. It's something I can share, and I can get this guy, and he can be nice and comfortable again, and he can stop feeling alone because I can share. But guys, but you can't share this crap unless you're past it. You've got to pull the newcomer with a vision. You've got to hold the candle high so that that newcomer can come towards the light. If you're still a victim, you can't do that. That's why I absolutely vehemently disagree with people that want to continue to milk this stuff. Let's get past it so that we can help somebody else. And you can get past it if you'll do this work. Guys, I spent 10 years in therapy dealing with that kind of crap. 10 years in therapy dealing with all these deep... And I never got past any of it until I sat down and did a 4-step and dumped a 5th step with a man that understood what this process was about. And I got free. I got free. Changed my life forever. That's what this is about.
Hey, Chris?
Yep.
I'd just like to say one thing here, that, you know, when people are talking about forgiveness or about a molestation or whatever, that, you know, I'm not on the same level as most of you people here, but, you know, whenever, occasionally, when I get people like that, I always, you know, turn to this and I say something like this. I said, this was our course. We realize, and the word realize means it becomes real. We realize that people who wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick.
Yeah.
Though I did not...
You're down with it? You hear what he's saying?
Yeah.
It's not on the CD. We got to talk. It talks about we're gonna pray for ourselves and ask God to help us from being angry at this person. This person's a sick person. How sick would you have to be to hurt a child? Very sick. I'm going to tell you this. Thank God I don't have to walk a day in that person's shoes. I'm grateful I'm just a little fried pie alcoholic and drug addict. Truly. We talked about it earlier. That's what this entire program is about. If this program was about justice, this room would be empty.
Yeah.
This program is about mercy. And I'm going to grant you mercy. Absolutely. Y'all cool? We'll see y'all back up here at whatever time. Lunch break.